thank you all so much for coming. It's very exciting to see so many people here. We did sell out, so I'm glad you can all be here today. My name is Carol Varney. I'm the Executive Director at the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona. Most of you probably know us as TPAC, Tucson Pima Arts Council. Same thing. The reason we're doing this today is because, in part, we surveyed our prospective grantees about a year ago and asked folks how many organizations, how many foundations they had applied to in Southern Arizona and how many times they had applied to the NEA, if at all. And a lot of folks had never applied to the NEA, and so we thought, you know, it would be great to get the NEA here so that we could all answer questions for you as funders and from the NEA as well. I know that a few people had said in their responses to this that they wished that this had happened before the artworks deadline. And I'm sorry, I tried. It did not work out, but we tried. Now you're going to be so prepared for next year's artwork, or actually in the fall, there'll be an artwork. So we're just ahead of the curve for the fall deadline. I need to thank the City of Tucson and Pima County for supporting the Arts Foundation, and that's what makes these professional development opportunities possible. I also want to thank our panelists for being here today, and thank Carol for coming out from Washington, D.C., and her colleague as well. A few housekeeping items. One is that we are audio recording this, so that's happening right now. If you don't want to be recorded, then you might want to hand up questions when we get to that. I'm going to try to post this on our website afterwards, so feel free to share that when that becomes available. Bathrooms are down the hall on the right and on the left. And without further ado, I first want to welcome up Ruben Reyes from Congressman Grijalva's office, who is somewhere there. He is. Come on up. And he's going to tell us about how Congressman Grijalva's office can help in this area.
First,
yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you so much for being here.
No problem, thank you.
Right
in the
middle of my
sorry.
Good morning, my name is Ruben Reyes, district director is what they call me behind my back at Congresswoman Grijalva's office. Runs with a bunch of other cool names. Basically, the congressman has four offices, one office in Washington, D.C., where he is right now, three offices in Southern Arizona. One here in Tucson, another one in Avondale, which is also part of our district, and another office in Somerton, which is in Yuma County, which is the southwest part of our district. If you look at if you take a geographical pie of Southern Arizona, it's literally the southwestern part of Southern Arizona that the congressman represents. So it's a pretty large district, urban, rural, farm working areas, agricultural areas, education. We have three universities, four military installations, one international border, one interstate border, four indigenous tribes, seven cities, four counties. So I have to be jack of all trades, master of nothing, which is fine. I mean, it's an eclectic district, but we welcome the challenges. And the reason I like to give a good profile of our district is that people can gauge the amount of work that goes through our office. In Southern Arizona, we basically do two things. And I like to keep it simple, actually, is what I'm trying to say. The first thing is casework, okay? And this may or may not apply to you. And it may or may not apply to what you're doing here today. Casework is just individual one-on-one help with any constituent person that lives in our district that has to do with the federal government. That could be Social Security, that could be passports, that could be immigration issues, or you're individually applying for a grant. So we like to help out. We have a team of case workers that when people come in and say, I want help because X, Y, and Z with the federal government, they fill out a little form that gives us permission to work on their particular case or on their issue. We need their permission to work on it, so that's why we need that form with the signature. And then we'll look at it individually, and then sometimes we get positive outcomes, and sometimes we don't. I wish that I could tell you that we had a magic wand, that let's go to Congressman Grijalva, and we'll fix it, and we'll call somebody, and there you have it. That's not really the case. We do, however, have very, very good workers that are very good at cutting through a lot of red tape, a lot of bureaucracies, and sometimes that person's quote-unquote case, whatever it may be, is just stuck somewhere in somebody's system or desk, and sometimes a phone call could be, oh, here it is, and there you go, and we move things along. And then and then sometimes there's just nothing we can do to help. That's just the way it goes. Now, that's one of the things that we do in all three of our offices in Southern Arizona. The other item that we do is just outreach, what I call it, outreach. We go out into the community, let people know what we do. We tell the community what the congressman is doing in Congress and what Congress is doing, because sometimes they're two different things. Very different things. And we also like to listen to what the community is saying, I go back and report to my boss or my team. Now, what Congress is doing or not doing, and what my boss is doing or not doing. Obviously, I mean, everybody's heard about the shutdown. Why was there a shutdown? Over the budget. Why the budget? Over the wall. Okay, fine. Wherever you stand on that issue, there's a whole, like, trillions and billions of dollars of other things that had nothing to do with that, that are part of the budget, that was still not being enacted. With that comes, everything that the government does on a day-to-day basis. With that comes grants. Obviously, the congressman has always been very supportive of arts programs, funding for education and the arts, and we will continue to do so. We understand that in these last political budgetary cycles, these grants have been dwindling. They've been harder and harder to come by. Not only harder to come by, but harder to access. We understand that. We have now, between our offices in D.C. and in Southern Arizona, we're trying to coordinate as to how can we make that a little bit easier for organizations or individuals to access that. So while it's not a new issue for y'all, and neither it is for our office, we do have some new challenges. Now, I'll just flat out say it, because of the administration and because of where they want to go with these things. So I'm here to tell you that, no, I don't know where all these grants are, whose backyard they're all buried in, and we can all go and just pick up a nice little bureaucratic shovel and start picking them up, and there you go. What I am here to tell you is that the age-old question, we're here to help. Many times, you guys are the experts in these fields. And while you may come into some bureaucratic walls or obstacles, call us. Contact our office. I'm perhaps the easiest person in the world to get a hold of. Ruben Reyes at Congressman Grijalva's office. I will leave a card. It'll have my email. It'll have my phone number and all that good stuff. But if for some reason you cannot get a card or you did not get one, Ruben at Congressman Grijalva's office. Just call the office. We're online all the time. And I'm only a phone call or an email away. If you identify a grant, a federal grant, I'm talking about, and you need several things. Number one, maybe a letter of recommendation or a letter of introduction is what we call. Call us. We will look at your request. Is your organization in our district, and or is your organization going to be doing work in our district, and how does it affect our constituency? And are you competing against another organization that's doing the same thing? Those are the things that we take into consideration as to whether or not we write a letter of introduction and or a letter of recommendation. And I say those two words, they're basically the same thing. But every time we write a letter on behalf of something or someone, I understand it's difficult, but I agree with this with these rules. We have to run that letter by an independent ethics office, and they look at the letter and say, yes, you can write this letter, or no, you cannot write this letter because it gives preferential treatment to somebody or whatever. So sometimes we go around a letter of recommendation and we do a letter of introduction. So that's why I say those two things. But it's basically the same thing. Not only can we do that, but also, once you have identified where you are applying to and that you've engaged our office, there's probably a good a good way for our office to do some limited tracking. And what I say by limited tracking is, let's say you're waiting on a decision and you still haven't heard anything, or you just don't know where your application is in the process. Call us, let us know, and we can try to find out where it is. We find out that that's those two little things already, you know, you're already above a lot of different obstacles and mountains that most people in organizations go through. So we are more than happy to do that. What else? Oh, yes. Another thing that, between you and I,
you're just
putting
on the audio.
Huh? Between you and I am judging from the from the response and the attendance here this morning, I would be more than happy to talk to either you or anybody else or a group to do a grants workshop through our office. When and where, we can discuss that. Who we bring, we can discuss all of that. But I'm always trying to gauge, figure out, listen to people, see what's needed, what is not needed. I don't want to waste your time. If it's something that you've already done in the past, that's fine. You're not going to hurt my feelings if you don't want to have one. We can have workshops. I'm also looking at, or maybe perhaps a discussion with either our staff or the congressman at some time in the future in having roundtable discussions. We have a boatload of those. Unfortunately, we have them mostly due to these knee-jerk, you know, in the media type of issues. A year and a half ago, when this new administration took over, we had an average of, we had about 8 or 9 different roundtables on different subjects, and we replicated those in Nogales, Tucson, Phoenix, and Yuma, and we did them in 5 days. Wow. Okay, because it was everything from immigration, social security, the environment, public lands, all those issues. And then the media didn't cover it, and then five months later, when public forums were in style, the media was calling us, why don't you have roundtable discussions or forums? Because you didn't cover them like 6 months ago. But just because you don't hear about them, we're constantly doing those. Now, why do I have to do it? Because why do we like to do a lot of these roundtable discussions on many different facets? Number one, it puts my boss in front of a lot of large crowds. I don't like to put them, I want to talk to the congressman, sure, but it's a one-on-one deal. It's not going to work. You've got 776,000 constituents. It's just not going to work. But also, we believe that, for example, in I don't want to say the word niche, but in niche issues, word spreads once we start having these roundtable discussions on issues. I'd like to have one on the arts, and arts funding, just like we do in small businesses and immigration, any of those issues. So, I don't know if it's a lot to digest, but I do these presentations all over Southern Arizona, sometimes the state. Like I said, I'll say it again, I'm here to help. I'm going to leave my business cards here. Mm-hmm. But before I leave, any questions? You don't have to live in our district for us to engage in us. Just remember, if what you are doing affects parts of our district or affects our constituency or is working in a school that is in our district, we are more than happy to talk to you and work with you and do something together in the future. Mm-hmm. Questions? Is that what you want to come? Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. So now it is my great pleasure to introduce, now you'll have to correct me if I say your name incorrectly, but I am from Maine, so I think I could get it. Carol Lanoe-Lee.
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. Carol, actually, the other Carol, is an Arizona, are you an Arizona native?
No, but I did spend some time here.
Has spent some significant time in Arizona and actually has a lot of connections to the arts in Arizona. Went to grad school here in Arizona, and so has a lot of strong ties here. I'm very glad that she's able to be here and that the government opened up again so that this was possible. I had some nail-biting moments where I thought, is this going to happen at all? So welcome, Carol, and please join me in thanking her for being here.
Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be back in Arizona. I did go to ASU for graduate school. I did their Theater for Youth program a long time ago. And I worked for Arizona Theater Company for a little bit of time. So I feel happy to be back here. So I'm going to take just a second to figure out what the best way to move forward is. Yeah, there it is. Okay, so I'm going to use that button. Now the key for me will be whether I need to use my glasses or not. So I might bounce back and forth. Okay, and I also have my paper copy just in case. So this grant workshop is more of a 30,000 foot view of the agency. I'm not going to get really, really into the nitty-gritty of the application process because it is very nitty and gritty. But what I want to be sure to leave you with today is the encouragement to reach out to us at the NEA at any time. I mean that in the most sincere way. We have a very, very accessible, approachable staff who desperately want to help you succeed in your application. So, the NEA is kind of a labyrinth. There's a lot of things going on. The process by which you have to apply is somewhat Byzantine. We're sorry, we know that, but we're here to help you get through it. So I'm going to run through just some basic information real quickly. So obviously, as many of you know, the NEA was founded in 1965. It's the only arts funder in America, public or private, that supports the arts in all 50 states and U.S. territories. And we also can say that we are the only funder to make an award in all 435 congressional districts around the country every year. We are also a project partner with state and federal agencies and departments like agriculture and health and transportation. And obviously, we are partners with our state arts agencies like the Arizona Commission on the Arts, and we have some folks from that organization here today. So here are some of the things that the NEA does. Obviously, we award grants, we conduct funding, we conduct arts research and fund arts research. We manage several national initiatives, and then we have a lot of free resources on our websites, like weekly podcasts with artists and things that are kind of fun to follow. If you follow us on social media, you probably already know about those things. And these are the types of organizations that we fund. Basically, it's nonprofit, tax-exempt, 501c3 organizations. We also fund local arts agencies through a specific division. We fund school districts, although not individual schools. We fund colleges and universities, and we fund federally recognized tribal communities, or tribes. The basic eligibility requirements to apply to the NEA are a 3-year programming history. In some categories, that's 3 years of arts programming. and I'll point out which categories those are when we get to them. So a non-arts organization can apply if they've been doing at least 3 years of arts activity prior to the application deadline. And then obviously you would have to meet reporting requirements on past awards, and you have to have a DUNS number, you have to be registered with grants.gov, which is not the same entity as the NEA. It is the clearinghouse through which the federal government makes all of its grant awards, and again, we're sorry. And part of that registration involves registering your organization with the System for Award Management, or SAM.gov. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about those in a moment, but those are the basics on eligibility. These types of projects not funded, as it says, visit arts.gov for a full list, because there are more than this. But as I mentioned before, we can't fund individual schools. The only category in which we have grants for individuals at this point is literature, the literature fellowships. And obviously we can't fund facilities and construction. I'm a theater and musical theater specialist. So I always emphasize to my applicants that they have to be coming in for a specific project and not their 18-19 season of programming. And all of the categories across the NEA are for specific project funding rather than general operating support. So these are the levels of application review. We do put together peer review panels for our applications. It's not one NEA committee or NEA panel that sits somewhere in Washington and reviews every application. We put together discipline-specific panels. So in theater and musical theater, we get the largest number of applications per year. So we will put together six panels in the summer and six panels in the fall to review the applications that come in at each of our two deadlines. So it's a different panel every time is the point that I'm trying to make. And they are evaluating all of the applications on artistic excellence and artistic merit, which are congressionally mandated criteria. But we do have full definitions of those on our website. I'd be happy to talk further about those. Level two of review is after the panels have made their recommendations, they go to the National Council on the Arts, which is kind of like our board. And then finally, the chairman signs off on the final decisions. These are the major funding categories. Now, obviously, the first one there is partnership agreements. And partnership agreements are really only available for the 50 designated state arts agencies and the six territories and six regional arts organizations. Obviously, as I mentioned before, Arizona Commission on the Arts is one of our state partners who receives a partnership grant from us every year. By law, 40% of our grant dollars go directly to the states for them to distribute at their level through their own grant programs. The color coding on this map shows you which states belong to which regional arts funders. So as you can see, Arizona is part of the Western States Arts Foundation, or Federation rather, which we also call WESTAF. I'm gonna go back one second So on this, most of you, I would imagine, are probably gonna be interested in the grants for organizations. And the major programs through which we accomplish that are Artworks, Challenge America, Our Town, and Research Artworks. And then, as I mentioned before, we have grants for individuals in creative writing and translation. And generally, an organization is limited to one application per year. There are some limited exceptions to that rule. Okay. All right, so when you apply to the artworks category, artworks is like the umbrella big term for the main, what I call the main bread and butter grant program. When you apply, you will be submitting an application to one of 15 artistic disciplines. Obviously, we can fund projects that are at any stage of development, so creation, presentation, exhibition, education, services to the field. It's a big, wide door that opens up at two different deadlines. Right now, they are annually in February and July. So we just closed the first artworks deadline for this year, night before last. And our next one will be coming up. Step one of the next deadline is July 11th. And for artworks, grants generally range from $10,000 to $100,000. All grants require at least a one-to-one cost share or non-federal match. So for example, if you were applying for a $10,000 grant, which is the artworks minimum grant, you would need to show in your budget at least $10,000 of non-federal match. So the minimum project cost in artworks is $20,000. These are the program disciplines. And so one thing I want to really emphasize is that each one of these disciplines has designated agency staff. So I'm designated staff for musical theater and theater, and there are two of us. Visual arts, there's one person. Literature, there's right now one person, I think. So if for the most specific and accurate answers to your questions, the best thing to do when you're preparing to apply to artworks is to go to our website, to the contact section, find the specialist who is associated with that program. And if you call the wrong one of us, we're more than happy to lead you to the right place. And those are going to be the best people to answer your questions about applying for specific projects. And I'll get into that just a little bit more later. I wanted to touch quickly on another application opportunity, and it's called Challenge America. It is, it's exclusionary in that you can't apply to both Artworks and Challenge America. Those are the two categories where it's one or the other. The main thing to know about Challenge America is that the projects have to extend the reach of the arts to the underserved, and underserved is defined very, very broadly in terms of geography, ethnicity, economy, you know, all kinds of ways that people are underserved. It has an annual deadline, which is usually in April, and the grant amount is fixed at $10,000. So it's often a way for new applicants, if they have an appropriate kind of project, to approach the agency for the first time. I will let you know that they do have three very specific project types that are listed on the website. One is for guest artists, one is for public art, with like murals and something to attract cultural tourism through a community engagement process. And then the last one is collaborative marketing campaigns like Theater Week and things like that. So we do have two specialists on staff that are designated as the Challenge America specialists, because it's a multidisciplinary category. And they would be the best people to run your question by if you're thinking about whether or not a project would qualify for Challenge America. And then Our Town is an additional application opportunity. If you apply in Challenge America or Artworks, you can also apply to Our Town. The grants are a little bit larger. It's all about creative placemaking. And in fact, I wanted to read. So the two types of projects that we have funding available for in Our Town are place-based projects that contribute to the quality of life in local communities through arts engagement, cultural planning, and design. And those projects have to have a partnership with a local government and a nonprofit. So one of the partners has to be an arts and culture organization, and the other has to be a civic partner. And then the other project type is projects that build and disseminate knowledge about how to leverage arts, culture, and design as mechanisms for strengthening communities. Again, we have a designated staff in our design program that handles the Our Town portfolio. We also have, I think it's the next one, this cool thing on our website, which if you want to see some profiles of projects that have been funded in the past in Our Town, this is a great resource to kind of get an idea of what types of activities are a good fit there and what kind of work is being accomplished. Okay, and I think on this you can search by project type and you can search by state. You can find things around Arizona that may have been profiled. I don't know if there's anything. Oh, there we go. Yep. I wonder if it's like kind of live. Hang on. No, apparently it is not. However, this is something for later. You can get on our website and have fun with that. And then research is a core function of the agency. And as I mentioned before, we push out podcasts and surveys of public participation in the arts and lots of economic data. But we also do have a small Artworks category just for research. And there are two types of projects there. They support research that investigates the value or the impact of the arts. The two project types in research, right, those that aim to examine or value or impact of the arts, and those that aim to test the causal or inferred causal impact of the arts. So as you can see, it's kind of research speak, but we do have a wonderful program specialist in the research office who will answer your questions about a potential research application. And those grants range from $10,000 to $100,000, just like the Artworks category. And then, as I mentioned before, our only individual grants right now are literature fellowships. There's creative writing, poetry and prose, which has a March deadline, which is coming up. And then the translation projects that have a December deadline. And these are non-matching grants. They are purely their fellowships. So there is no match required, and they are to allow artists to set aside time for research, travel, and writing to get their works accomplished. Oh, and here, this little video, if it plays, is a an overview of the application process, sort of at a glance. Well, I don't know if it's actually going to play through here, but I can just, I will just tell you then. It's a short little video that basically describes the levels of application review that I mentioned earlier. But it's basically, you know, you apply, you establish a record in grants.gov saying that you are eligible to do business with the government, and you've sort of passed all of those hurdles. That establishes your application in our system, our applicant portal. And then for the second part of the application, you log in directly to our portal and complete the grant application form and upload work samples and really talk about the project. But the this is where you go on arts.gov to get started. And there's a lot of other places that you might wander around on the website, but the most important is to click on grants there. And there are three things you can do there. Apply for a grant will obviously take you into the description of all the different categories and let you choose a discipline and so forth. Manage your award is for current grantees to go on and complete reports and things like that. And then recent grants is a really useful link. If you go to recent grants, there's lots and lots of links to press releases from past grant rounds. And they're sorted by city and state, and they're sorted by project type and category. So you can look at examples of projects that have been funded in the past and see what their dollar amounts were that they were funded at. And it's a good way to get a sense of how people are structuring their projects and what is being successful in each discipline. So I always encourage folks to check that out. All right. So here's where I'm supposed to give you a few tips about the application process. But there are definitely more than a few tips. Let me just pop these all up here. There we go. Okay, so as I mentioned, complete your grants.gov and SAM.gov registrations early. Unfortunately, the way this is set up, it's not something that you can find out that there's a deadline later this week and be able to get an application in on time. It does involve a lot of advance planning. And also important to note that our application deadline leads our project start dates by about 9 months. So folks who just came in to us in February for an application, they're applying for work that will begin after January 1st of 2020. And if they apply at the July deadline, that'll be for projects starting after June 1st of 2020. So there's a long gestation process for the applications. So it really is about projects that are happening in the future and down the road. As I said, I cannot emphasize enough to please contact the staff with questions. Even though I'm a theater, musical theater person, I put my card back there. I'm happy to help you. If I'm not the right person for you to talk to, I'm happy to direct you to whoever that might be. Webinars, we do provide webinars in advance of each deadline unless we are shut down. So we did miss one this year. But we do have archived webinars that are available on the website that will walk you through the process. As I said, to look at the lists of previously awarded grants. We also have a section on the website where you can read sample applications that have been awarded grants in the past, the narratives there that have been kind of redacted for privacy. And then something else that I very much encourage people to do, whether or not you are successful in your grant application, is to call the staff and get feedback on your application. Because we have all of the notes that the panel recorded during their review, and we're more than happy to share with you their, you know, while protecting their anonymity, what their thoughts were. So even if you do get a grant, I often encourage those people to call us as well, just to find out what is working in your narrative and what isn't, where people might have had a question, but it wasn't a big enough question to keep you from getting funded. So always request feedback. We're happy to do it. Now, these next couple slides are just a little information about what else the agency is doing. Creative Forces is a partnership with the Department of Defense and Veterans Affairs. It's not a grant program you can apply for, but it is important work that the agency has been doing for about the last 5 or 6 years. NEA Big Read is a, you know, around the country community all gets together and reads a book program, a community reading program. Poetry Out Loud is a high school poetry recitation contest that takes place around the nation. Shakespeare in American Communities, which we work with our regional arts organization, Arts Midwest, to conduct the Shakespeare program, and that is basically for arts education activities around Shakespeare productions for high school students and maybe middle school students too. And then Blue Star Museums is our partnership with Department of Defense and tons of participating museums around the country that offers free admission for active duty military personnel and their families during the summer months. So here is another thing that we have available on our website, and that is some information about and statistics about arts in the economy. Now, when you're applying to the NEA, you're not going to have to convince anybody on those panels that the arts make good economic sense and economic impact. But this information is there for you to use for other purposes. And although I'm not allowed to advocate on behalf of the agency for which I work, I would suggest that if you were allowed to do so, you might be interested in some of these resources and little factoids. So I'm not going to read through all of this right now, but I think it's very useful information to have. And I wanted to let you know that in Arizona, this is how the numbers break down. 90,287 people employed in Arizona in the arts. 3.1% arts value added as a share of the state's economy. $4.9 billion in arts worker compensation. And then, so $9 billion value added to the state's economy by the arts. So if there is a section on our website where there's a map of the United States and any state, you can click on any state and get these numbers for that state. This data is from 2015, so it's not that fresh. However, I think it's probably still pretty useful. As I mentioned our peer panels before, this is how we find panels. We go out into the field and we talk to artists who are doing work because you are the people that we want to review our applications for us. So there is a form on the website that you can complete. However, I will tell you from my experience, the best way to get yourself on a panel is to reach out to someone like me or my colleagues who are the discipline specialists, because we're working with the directors to put together these panels. And if there's any theater people here, as I mentioned, we have the largest application load, which means we have the largest need for panelists. We have to come up with something like 70 panelists a year. And we do new ones, different panel composition every time. So please reach out to me if you have any interest in that, and I can sort of direct you to the right program specialist to give your information to. And that's just me. So I kind of raced through the end of that, and I'm happy to take questions. I kind of wanted to do that on purpose so that I could get a sense of who's in the room and what kind of questions you might have for me. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, hi. Thank you for coming.
Yes,
well,
sure.
This is my first time ever coming to one of these meetings.
Yeah.
And I had a question about how you said only 501c3s are eligible.
Mm-hmm.
What about 501c4s?
Not yet. I think there has been some discussion about whether or not that might be a direction to go in the future, but I haven't heard anything at the agency level. Right. People don't quite get it yet. And I'm not sure what kind of legal hurdles might still need to happen in order for 501c4s to be given the same kind of opportunities.
Like 24 types of.
Right.
Oh, and people don't realize
and people, yes, I got it, yeah. Yes?
If we currently have an NEA grant,
mm-hmm.
and we're finishing it this summer,
mm-hmm.
and
Can we apply for the July deadline even if our final report's not turned in?
Yes, yes. An organization can have more than one grant open at the same time with overlapping project periods. As long as it's for a different project, absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on the one-to-one match? Is in-kind eligible?
Yes.
And, like, what are the various things
sure.
that
you see? Sure. So, yes, in-kind is eligible. Usually in the project budget, we see a combination of in-kind and other sources. So, like, for example, in theater, what we see in the cash match section is usually ticket sales, other grants that were leveraged for the project, portions of other foundation grants like Schubert, and then also in-kind donations of things like rehearsal space or performance space or facilities. Or one thing I would note is that if you do include in-kind costs, you want to make sure that they're reasonable and allocable and trackable, and you want to include them on both sides of the budget so that you can see that this is what it costs us and this is what we're raising to meet those costs. Does that make sense? Does that help? Okay. Yes.
A question about the artworks initiative.
Yeah.
I know that you can't tell the future, but is this an initiative that you expect will be a focus for years to come?
Yeah, I do. So it's basically the name of our, what I called our bread and butter grant program. It used to be called Access to Artistic Excellence. Thank goodness it was changed to something else other than that. I haven't heard of any changes that might be coming down the pike for it. It's basically, as I said, it throws the doors open to all kinds of project types. Now, in some disciplines, they like to align certain project types with each one of their deadlines. So all of that is laid out in the guidelines. If you're applying in February, here's what we want to see. Here's if you're applying in July. But even if they change the name of it from artworks to something else, it will still be that, you know, sort of broad category with individual disciplines within it and two deadlines a year. I doubt that that will ever change because of the way our council meetings are.
And then also with the research portion of that, is there a match required for the research?
There is, yes. That is also a one-to-one match. Yeah. Back there in the red.
Clarify the parent organization.
Yes. Sure. So one of the exceptions, I mentioned earlier that it's typically one application per year per organization with a few exceptions. And one of those exceptions is a parent organization that has an independent component within its umbrella. For example, I always use Yale. Yale University comes into us with several applications a year because within Yale, they have an art museum, they have the Yale Repertory Theater, and they have a couple of other things that have been approved as independent components. So what makes an independent component in general are a separate board and staff, usually separate fundraising activities from the parent organization, And a distinct mission, a mission that is distinct from what the parent organization's is. Individual departments within universities are usually not independent components, but if it's the only application coming from that university to the endowment in a year, then you know it would be fine on its own. But the in order to make that determination, you would want to contact the program specialist for the area you're going to apply to. And then there's literally a questionnaire that you fill out that describes the relationship between the entity and the parent in terms of mission and budget and board. And then we run it up the flagpole and our senior staff makes a determination of whether or not it's independent enough to allow a separate application opportunity. Does that make sense?
Follow up on that. So
yeah.
We received that designation.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go through that process again when we apply again?
Every 5 years. So literally, we have this master spreadsheet of approved independent components, and they only have to be re-vetted every 5 years. So when someone comes in and they're a new one that we've never seen, we just go to the list and make sure that they've done this before and that it hasn't been more than 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. grants.gov and SAM.gov registrations have to happen every time you apply, or you just do it once?
No. Well, you do it once. But the rate at which you have to change your passwords and update your registration and things is pretty phenomenal. So, and do you have an answer to that question?
And yeah. On that note, if you haven't done it, know that both SAM.gov and grants.gov registration is free.
Yeah.
And once you are in that pipeline, you will get phishing scam after spam, you know, people offering to renew it for you for $300, ignore those.
Yes, thank you. Yes, that's absolutely true. It costs nothing to do your registration or to renew it. SAM.gov registration needs to be renewed annually, so you'll always want to make sure that it's not going to expire like during, right before the deadline or during the deadline or something like that. You want to make sure that that is all taken care of far in advance of the actual step one deadline.
And is that registration for the whole organization or multiple
people
that have different?
It is for the organization as an entity. So the organization will sign up for a DUNS number and have this, you know, unique identifier. And then when you do the registration, it will basically ask you to designate individuals who are authorized to submit on the organization's behalf. It's basically making sure anybody who wants to do business with the federal government has to go through these registrations. So contractors and things all go through this. It's kind of like presenting your passport and saying, I'm good to do business with the government. Now will you consider my application? That's why it has to be done in two different parts. Yes?
I have a question about the panelists. By the way, I'm with the Arizona Theater Company.
Yay! Nice to meet you. Hi.
Is that for lay people? I mean, what are you really looking at? What are the criteria? Because I think it's a wonderful opportunity.
Sure.
Community members?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So every panel, we use 5 to 6 panels. We like to try to use at least 6 if we can. Every panel has to have geographic, ethnic, gender, and as much as we can, aesthetic diversity. There is one layperson on every panel, and the way a layperson is defined is someone who is knowledgeable about the arts but does not currently make their living in them. So a lot of times we've used board members from theater companies or folks who are retired but no longer making a living in the arts. Those are ringers. In terms of lay people, we don't just go out on the street and ask somebody to come in. We try to actually get people who are still knowledgeable, just but they qualify as a lay person. Yeah. Yes.
Is there a portal on arts.gov where we can access the research projects you've funded, so we so people can have access to see what other research is going on?
I think if you go, I don't know on it's not on grants.gov, so you would go to
like
our
arts.gov.
Website. Yeah, arts.gov. You would go to grants and then recent grants, and then you should be able to see, there'll be a lot of links to recent press releases, and you should see one that has research artworks in the title. And if not, I can help you.
That's okay. But there is somewhere on the website.
Yeah,
you are digging.
I'm pretty sure that there is. I mean, that's a function of ours is to always make a public announcement of grants about a month or so after.
And the research that these organizations are completing are like open access research projects. So
I'm not familiar with that term. Open
so like anyone could access the research. It's not like
right.
Proprietary.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Is there a restriction, especially on the research arts artworks, that the money cannot be used towards administrative? Because I know, so I'm from a university, and I know that if we bring in government grants, then there's usually a hefty,
there's indirect costs,
unfortunate fee that we have to pay.
Yes,
That is okay.
Usually, universities will have a negotiated indirect cost rate with some entity in the government, and you can certainly use that and apply it. It does sometimes, I think it's more of a concern that my constituents at universities are concerned about how it will look, but it's something that we reassure our panelists, this is very normal, this is the way they do business. You don't have to charge it, but if the university requires you to charge it, you can.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Kristen.
Hi.
So kind of two-part question. Do you know, off the top of your head, if a research grant could be used to fund a feasibility study that could later be used to roll into an Our Town application?
Or is that I don't see why not. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's...
Feasibility study?
Yeah, that's okay. Probably... I mean, I would definitely recommend running it by the research office, but... You know, as I said before, we fund projects that are at different phases. So even the fact that you're going to maybe submit it to Artworks, I mean, Our Town down the line, would not preclude you from coming in to research for an earlier phase of the project.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for letting me be here and hang out in Arizona for a couple days. And see you all.
So as we move forward into this next funder panel, first I just want to say thank you again to Carol for joining us from the NEA. Thank you so much for being here. And just to emphasize a few of the points that Carol had, first, for real, no joke, if you're not signed up on grants.gov, do so immediately. Also, Sam, same thing, and Sam will bother you so many times to keep updating your password. It's annoying, but do it now so that you're ready for the next time that grant application opens. Also, her point about getting feedback, whether or not you got a grant, it's so great to get feedback. And yes, it's disappointing when you don't get the grant, but the more you learn from the program officer about what worked well and what didn't with the panel is great. Reach out to the staff. The staff at the NEA is fantastic. They are there for you, so don't be afraid. Just call them. I'm also very impressed by their research. Use their research in your grant applications. It's there for you. It's available to anyone. So do take advantage of all of their research. And lastly, truly, the best advice I can give you is to be a panelist. Be a review panelist for the NEA. I've been a review panelist in the past. It's a fantastic education for how the process works, what works for people in your grant application and what doesn't. And honestly, there are such a diverse viewpoints on every panel that as fresh as you might be if you don't get the grant, it gives you great insight into how that process works and how it might go and what you can do to improve in the future. So just little bits of advice there. Now I want to thank all of our panelists for joining us here this morning. Their names are here on the screen, but we have John Omarosa from the Lovell Foundation, Kelly Huber from the Community Foundation for Southern Arizona, Kristen Pierce-Kent from Arizona Commission for the Arts, Samantha Anderson from Arizona Humanities, and Natalia Gabrielson from the Arts Foundation. We had also invited Arizona Community Foundation to be here today. Unfortunately, they have a very big investment meeting tonight, so they could not be here, but they did send a PowerPoint presentation, which I printed out and left back at the table. So if you'd like to pick that up, please feel free to do so. So the way this is going to work is each panelist is going to introduce themselves and talk about their organization and what kinds of arts funding that they have, and then I'll do a quick moderated Q&A at the end. So without further ado, I will hand it off to John. Thank you, Carol.
Welcome, everybody. I've met quite a few of you, but those of you I haven't, it's nice to see you all here today. I'm the executive director of the David and Laura Lovell Foundation. We're a medium-sized family foundation here in Tucson. We've been here for a little over 24 years. And we fund initiatives, and I'll go into that, what that means in a minute, but in integrative health and wellness, mental health, youth access to the arts, and gender parity. And there's often crossover between those areas, and that's okay for us. We fund in Pima County, Greater Tucson, also statewide, regional, and national initiatives, as long as they touch on Tucson and our community where our trustees live. We are currently working, as I mentioned, on initiative grants, and that are made to one or more nonprofit organizations. And initiatives, in our definition, are addressing a root cause of a social issue in one of our focus areas, either through elimination of the problem or creation of a solution. They're altering structures or systems so that they can better address the root causes of those issues, or they're transforming organizations or groups of organizations that are better equipped to alter those systems and structures and get at those problems. So it's kind of a nested definition of what an initiative is, and you could be doing any one of those things or all three of them. We're very collaborative in our approach. We partner with other nonprofits, with educational entities, with other funders. And you can find a lot more on our website under how to apply. And I would recommend you do that before reaching out to us, but there's a lot of information in there. We also have a letter of interest process. So rather than sending me an email or calling me, I would ask that you go through, you register and send in that letter of interest. It's not a heavy lift. It's usually, you know, like a page worth of fill in the blank places to put in your idea, and then we respond to that idea. We are an invitation only funder, and so if we like your letter of interest, we would reach out and talk about what a full invitation would look like. And most of the proposals we review will be looking at our winter or our spring board meetings. So we have a meeting in January and a meeting in June, but we're flexible these days in terms of funding something when it's ripe versus having it, you know, have to fall on one of our board meetings. But at some point we have to stop looking at letters of interest for the next board meeting and sort of kick it over to the next round, so to speak. So let's see. As I mentioned, go online to submit a letter of interest. And one thing, you may have known us in the past, either you received a grant from us or you're currently a grantee. But we've shifted, as I said, from programs to initiatives. And the reason that is occurring is we're sunsetting. The target date is by 2030, and it could happen sooner. And that's where the board wanted to focus, trying to have as much impact as possible in the current lifespan of the current grantees with the remaining funds that we have. And so that's really why we're focused on that.
Hi everyone, I'm Samantha Anderson. I'm with Arizona Humanities. So we are actually the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities, so NEA sister, how they have that partner organization. We're the same thing for the National Endowment for the Humanities. So a lot of the things you saw on screen actually pertains to what we do as well, just because we have a lot of the same guidelines. And actually my guideline packet is out back there. It's 15 pages of fascinating information, but I definitely recommend taking a look at it if you're interested in pursuing the Arizona Humanities grant. There's a lot of great information. And once you go through that and your eyes are glazed over, give me a call. I'd love to discuss it more with you and kind of clarify things and things like that. So, like I said, we're the humanities organization, so we have a little bit different focus than a lot of, than you say, like the NEA and the NEH. They're kind of like sisters, but they're separate for some, I don't know why they're separate, they go together so well, but they are. And so really what it usually ties or boils down to is not necessarily the project that you're putting on, it's your focus and your intent for that project. So for a lot of programs that we fund that have an arts component, there's an arts component, but there's also an element of the humanities in that as well. Humanities are, I mean, traditional definition is going to be your liberal arts department, so English, history, religious studies, jurisprudence, musical history, art history, things like that. But the way we define it is much more broad. We really look at it as, it's how people interact with each other, it's how we interact with space, how we interact with the environment. It's really what boils down to what makes us human. And how do we present that to others? So when you're looking at your programming and looking at, is the Arizona Humanities, you know, an appropriate funder, look at your program and say, is that the bread and butter of my program? Is that really the final goal of my program? Is to get people interacting, with either a topic, a culture, an idea, a place, a history, then most likely, yes. So I want to say anytime you have those questions, give me a call because I can definitely walk it through with you. We tend to focus on active engagement programs, so programs that get people engaging with an artist, an author, like I said, a space, or with each other. So we also fund a lot of programs that get people talking to each other, which can be very scary sometimes, especially in this time, but it's something that's definitely necessary. And art, theater, literature, those are great mediums in order to do so. We have two different types of funding. We have our project grants. Those are our oldest running grant, and it's more of our traditional grant panel style. So it's up to $10,000, requires a one-to-one match. Again, since we're federally funded, we follow those guidelines as well. And they are awarded twice per year. So we have two cycles per year. We have a letter of intent phase, a full application phase, and then it goes before an actual panel comprised of board members as well as outside scholars. So if you are interested in being an outside scholar, if you please send me your information as well, because we're always looking for scholars to serve on our panel. And again, that's more of our traditional model. We also have our mini grants, which are up to $2,000. Mini grants are relatively new. We've only had them for the past 3 years, so we're still kind of working out what they're going to be. But they're really our attempt to target smaller organizations. So there's an annual budget cap. You can't apply unless you have an annual budget of $500,000 or less. So large organizations can partner with a smaller organization, but the smaller organization is the one applying. They're the ones receiving the funds. They're the ones responsible for all of the reporting, and they have full control over that financial responsibility, which can be a lot. But it's a great way to kind of get to know this grant-making process. It can actually help you if you're interested in applying for NEH or NEA in the future, because they're very similar. And again, they're kind of our way of targeting smaller organizations, mostly because the feedback we receive from those organizations, and this isn't true for every organization with the $500,000 budget or less, but we received a lot of feedback that they may be intimidated by the project grant cycle system, you know, this idea of going before a panel, you know, up against organizations that have professional grant writers and all these other things. They just didn't see how they could be competitive. Maybe they had a smaller staff of a few people. No one really had a lot of experience with grant writing. So it's a way to help them bridge that gap. And again, it's a brand new system, so it's on a rolling basis. You can put your application in 60 days before your program is set to start, and we get a response back to you within 15 days. So again, it's a little bit different system. It's brand new, but we're really excited about the programs we've been able to find through it. So I think that's at least 10 minutes. So I'm going to...
Thank you. I'm Natalia Gabrielson. I'm with the Arts Foundation. I manage our grants program. I see many folks here today have applied for funding opportunities from us in the past. And if you haven't, we would love to see an application from you. We have five sort of main types of funding opportunities available. And I'll put a real quick blip in for this one. But one of those is our youth scholarship. And the application for that is actually tomorrow night, 11:59. So if you have a high school senior in your life who is intending to attend Pima Community College, we would love to see an application from them. It shouldn't be too hard to put together, but feel free to reach out to me if that's something that you know somebody might be interested in. It would be a real quick application. But yeah, that's tomorrow night. Other than that, we have our New Works project grant. That will be closing April 8th, Monday, April 8th. So this is a specific artist project grant. And this year, so the disciplines in which we award those alternate year by year, but the New Works project grant for this year is open to the disciplines of performing arts, music and sound, and emerging fields. So if you are an artist or you know an artist who might be interested in applying, feel free to recommend that they get in touch, or feel free to contact me. I'm happy to talk about those. Other than that, we have other opportunities both for individuals and for organizations. As far as individuals go, you can also apply for our START grant, and that's our START mini grant. So awards for that are usually between $500 and $1,000, and they're either for community sort of projects or for artist resources. And those are a pretty short application process as well for that one, but I believe applications for that would be due in September, I think. But if you grabbed this little green sheet with our logo at the top, it has all the dates on there. Organizations organizations or community groups can also apply for the START grant, so that's an option as well. Otherwise, organizations are welcome to apply for our general operating support, and that is for 501c3 organizations, arts organizations specifically for that, but that is general operating support that we put out into Pima County. Award sizes for that vary, but it is sort of dependent on budget size for organizations. And then lastly, we also have our event sponsorship program, and that's something very, very new that we only opened up this last year. But it's funded mostly through our marketing budget instead of sort of grant-specific money, but that's open to nonprofits, not just arts organizations, but nonprofits in Pima County who are hosting an arts event. And so that would be the Arts Foundation sponsoring an arts-related event through nonprofits. But those are sort of the five main funding opportunities that we offer. And we try to have it so that both individuals and organizations have sort of several opportunities there to apply. Otherwise, our grant sort of review process takes a lot of community input. For each application process that we have, we also have a review panel that reviews all of those applications. That review panel is generally made up of 5 to 7 community members, so that might be folks who work at nonprofits or artists or just community members in general who are sort of related to the arts field. And they review those applications, and they score those applications as well. And those scores move on to our grants committee, who sort of look over those scores and review the process. And they make an approval, and that recommendation sort of moves on to our board of directors, who makes the final funding allocations for every grant cycle. The only sort of exception to that is our event sponsorship program, which is determined by a committee, but since it uses marketing funds and not grant funds, it is not approved through the grants committee or through the board of directors. So that's a little bit of a different one, but not too altogether different. Otherwise, I'm happy to answer questions afterwards, but lots of art-specific funding available from us, and I'm happy to talk about any of those things. But yeah, thank you all for being here. I pass on to Kelly.
Hi, everybody. I am Kelly Huber. I'm the Director of Grants and Initiatives here at the Community Foundation. First, I wanted to welcome you all to our new CF campus. I hope you're enjoying it. If you have a few minutes afterwards, I invite you to meet with Chelsea. She's sitting at the desk out there. She can give you a great tour. This campus is actually a co-working space for nonprofits. So if you're a nonprofit and looking for a place to office, we're here for you. So please meet with Chelsea out front if you guys are interested in that. The Community Foundation for Southern Arizona has been around since 1980. And since then, we've put about $180 million out into Southern Arizona. So we're a foundation that's geographic focused. We fund nonprofits, anything south of the Gila River. If you're familiar with Arizona geography, the Gila River is sort of Florence, Casa Grande, south. So we fund not just in Pima County, that's a misconception. We fund in Pima County, Santa Cruz County, Yuma County, Cochise County, a little bit of Pinal is actually in our service area, and then a Grand Prairie. So if you do work in any of those counties, we are available. So we're asked to speak a little bit about our competitive grant processes. We have a bunch of them. The best way to sort of keep in track of all of the different things that happen with our foundation is just to go on our website and sign up for our newsletter as a nonprofit. Down at the bottom it says sign up for updates. You can select your nonprofit and you'll get every RFP that we release. In terms of arts funding, for us, we see arts organizations typically intersect with almost every grant round that we have here, whether it be end of life, whether it be LGBTQ issues, whether it be general operating support. Typically, arts foundations can apply for most of those grant rounds. So I thought I would just go through all of them real quick with you so you can get a really high-level view of them. The first one that I'm going to talk about is the one that's actually like her due tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Trust me, you can still put it together. Okay. So our core grants is a general operating support grant. So again, this is amazing when you have an opportunity to receive general operating support. It's to help high impact nonprofits. And again, the nonprofit is able to do with the funding whatever they see best. So if that's infrastructure, taking care of staff, pretty much you want to buy pencils for all of your students, you can, that's what we always joke, you can do anything with that money. It really is too good to be true, and so please take a look at that on our website or see me after if you want to try to get an application together on the next day. so those grants are between $10,000 and $30,000 unrestricted for organizations. We also this summer will be releasing another capacity building grant for organizations, so stay tuned in the summer to hear about that. I'll give you a little hint, it's called Catch-A-Fire. The Bob Marley album. So stay tuned for that. We also do have an endowment we call the Endowment for the Arts Grant, and we actually partner with the Arts Foundation for this one. Back in 1989, the Endowment for the Arts gave challenge grants to community foundations to build an endowment to help support rural arts organizations. And we were one of those community foundations. So we've given about $500,000 out to rural arts organizations. Since 1989, and this year we helped three rural arts organizations jointly, and I think they're at $5,000 each in rural areas, so communities less than 50,000 people, and the grants are $5,000, and your budget has to be less than $150,000. So we partner with them because they're the art experts. we also have a grant if you're working in the LGBTQ community at all. We have a grant called the Alliance Fund, and that one is coming up on March 22nd, so if you need a flyer on that, that deadline. That is $5,000 to help any work that you're doing to support the LGBTQ community. We also have grants that will come up in the fall if you're doing work to help support the African-American community in Southern Arizona. And then we also have a Latino Community Fund that's going to be supporting grants also coming out in the fall. We do lots of other grants through our donor advice funds, too. We partner with Level on an end-of-life grant every year. So there's just lots of opportunities for the organization. The last piece of it is we have at Community Foundations what we call donor advice funds. And some people always say, what are those? How do I get access to donor advice funds? So I always like to tell people how to get access. The best thing you can do is we hold over 500 funds at the Community Foundation where donors really direct their funding to nonprofits that they are interested in. So the best thing you can do as a nonprofit is to really engage with one of the program managers or myself here at the foundation and send us your information, a one-pager on your organization so we know who you are. So if a donor says, I want to support kids' youth theater, for example, we say, did you know about these five different youth theaters here in Tucson? If we don't know about you, we can't help present those to the donors. So please just send us an email with a one-pager or brochure, or give us a call and tell us about your organization. That really helps us out. I think one of the other big things is if you ever do get a grant from us or you didn't get a grant from us, please, I think as the other Carol said, please just give us a call. We'd love to hear from you and be able to give you that feedback on your application. You know, it's always one of the hardest parts of our job is, you know, we can't fund everybody, and so sometimes we can give you a little bit of information that can help you be more competitive or help match you with another funder that we think may be a better match. So thank you, and I'll be around for questions if anybody has any.
I'm going to stand because I'm in the corner, and I have a theater background, too. Hi, I'm Kristen Pierce-Kent. I'm the Organizational Grants and Services Manager for the Arizona Commission on the Arts and also their Accessibility Coordinator. The Arizona Commission on the Arts is the state arts agency that Carol was speaking about in the beginning. So we are the state affiliate partner. We work and are funded by the National Endowment for the Arts. And we use the majority of their funding for our programs and operations. And we use our funding from the state. We have to do a one-to-one match with their funds as well. So our funding from the state of Arizona is what we use the majority of those funds to make our grants. So you actually can match their grants with our grants. Oh. Just a little note of interest. We are governed by a 15-member governor-appointed commission. I believe there's a commissioner from every county that serves. And we have a statewide mandate. So we fund artists, arts organizations, arts entities, collectives,
and arts education activities throughout the state. We have a portfolio of grant programs to do that. I believe we have 7 or 8 grant programs right now as an agency that are active. We have organizational grants, and that's what I manage, and I'll talk more about. I'll have a postcard in the back. We do have a deadline coming up in 2 weeks. We have a 2-week deadline, so if you haven't started that, it's grant season. Yeah, it's spring grant season fundraising. Yeah. So there is 2 weeks left if you are interested in putting in a community development grant, or I'm sorry, community investment grant, which is our general operating support grant for arts organizations, or a festival grant, that is a festival project grant. Then we also have grants for individual artists. We have a research and development grant available. We have a new grant program with a rolling deadline called the Artist Opportunity Grant. There's another deadline coming up March 15th for that. If you haven't seen that, check out our website. And then we also have arts learning grants for K-12 schools, and also for ongoing engagement for all stages of life with the arts. So I encourage you to go to our website at azarts.gov and click on grants if you want to see the full menu, and then you can dig deeper into the guidelines for each of those programs. But as I mentioned, I manage the grant programs for arts organizations. So our community investment grant is our largest grant program for the agency. There's about 200 to 250 applicants every year to that program, and last year we awarded $2.5 million across the state through that program. It's also a very large program because the entry point is only $5,000. So our smallest startup fiscally sponsored organizations, you don't have to have your 501c3 to apply in the smaller levels of that program. You can apply through a fiscal sponsor. That means that another registered nonprofit will act as your grant banker, essentially. And I can talk more about that if you have questions about fiscal sponsorship. We do not fund LLCs at this time. And I'm interested in the 501c4 question, but I think that individual left. So I'm not sure if fiscal sponsorship could work there too, but maybe that's a new road to explore. Anyway, so you need to have a minimum of $5,000 of annual income to come into our community investment grant program, and you can use those funds to fund pretty much anything you do with your organization. Bless you. You can fund people. You can pay your staff, your artists, yourself, anyone that needs to get paid, contractors, CPAs, anything like that. You can fund your artistic production work, paint, materials, paper, whatever it is that you need to create your art, you can use those funds for. And also administrative overhead expenses. And as my colleagues have mentioned, the general operating support is usually the most difficult kind of funding to find these days. So we're very proud that we can supply that. The grant guidelines are online. I could spend the entire rest of my time talking about that grant program, so I won't go too deeply into it. But there are 2 weeks to the deadline. March 14th at 11:59 p.m. is that deadline. So if you're interested in that grant program, please check it out as soon as possible. There are multiple applications because it is a large program. So we have one set of guidelines for what we consider our small organizations, folks with annual incomes under $250,000, so that $5,000 to $250 mark. You have one set of guidelines and online application. Then for our large, mid-sized to large institutions, our levels 4, 5, and 6 folks, there's a separate set of guidelines and application process. We just recently did this. This is the new thing this year that I've been working towards this for several years now, trying to create a lighter lift for our small organizations to apply in this program so there's more return on your investment for your time going through this process to apply. So if you go through it, let me know what you think. Take the community feedback on this new development. And we're always working as an agency to continually try to improve our processes to help support and supply funding to the state of Arizona. Festival grants, as I mentioned, arts organizations are eligible, but also university and college departments are eligible for that program. Other nonprofits, other government units, libraries, senior centers, things of that nature. So if you have a festival activity that you are a part of or sponsor or put on, that might be a grant program for you. It is also an even lighter lift than applying for the community investment grant program. It's a really good stepping stone for folks, I find, to come into our grant making, our programs as an organization, going through festivals if that applies for your work, and then coming eventually into our community investment grant program. We also have a panel process, very similar to other public funders. So I put together review panels every year. I usually use about 45 to 60 individuals.
five or six panel members per session. And because there are so many applications, we try to cap our panels at 20 applications, 20 to 25 applications. Because it is a lot of reading. It's a lot of engagement we ask from our volunteers. I say volunteers, but we do offer a very small stipend now for your time and travel. So for folks outside of the Phoenix metro area, we offer $100 to help you attend a one-person in-day meeting in Phoenix and to help with your other time that goes into reading and preparing for the panel process. So you can find out and self-nominate if you're interested to be a panelist. I'm always recruiting panelists. Everyone I meet is a potential panelist. I also try to put together, we put together folks from across the state on those panels, in the arts, out of the arts, across disciplines, lay people, community leaders, youth. We're moving into including youth into our process this year, which is exciting. So it's a very diverse dinner party that I try to put together to review these grant applications and award public funds. So the award recommendations that come out of our public panel process are ratified by our commission board and then are paid out over the course of the next fiscal year. So we basically, you would be applying now for activities and funding that happens in the next fiscal year, fiscal year 20, and that's generally how our grant programs go. But with our commission, each grant program has its very own separate guidelines, so please, I encourage you to read the guidelines. I know they may be long, but every word matters. We try to cut out all of that. So we try to just give you what you need to have a successful application process. So I'm happy to take your questions. I see a lot of my grantees or applicants already out there. How many people have applied for BCA funding?
Yeah.
Hi. So it's coming up. If you haven't started your applications yet, please do. Yes.
Can you apply for festival grant if you're a CIG recipient?
No. That's thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. So yeah, that program, you have to you could be eligible for both, but you have to pick and apply for only one each fiscal year, our fiscal year. So yeah, that's where the applicant needs to kind of decide which program is a better fit. Which funding might be better, which application lift is easier, and I'm happy to talk with folks about that, about trying to determine which application is better for you at this time. So I know we're going to go into general questions, yeah, so yeah. I'll give it back, so hang on.
Thank you very much, yeah. Everyone on the panel, and thank you all for submitting questions to us beforehand. I wanted to see if there were some commonalities amongst the questions, and there were. So first I'm going to go through a handful of those questions, and then we'll open it up to general Q&A. But before we do that, Kelly, I'm going to put you on the spot. I know you also have some artist awards.
Oh, like, Buffalo Exchange.
Like that, and then there's an opera, isn't there?
Yeah.
So, would you like to talk about those?
Sure.
Okay.
I'll do the best I can. I actually am not the person that works on the awards, but I'll give you a brief overview. So we do some artist awards every year. Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome.
We do one called the Buffalo Exchange Arts Awards. So it's sponsored by Buffalo Exchange Stores. As you know, they were started here. And each year they give a $10,000 cash award to an individual artist. And it alternates between performing artists and emerging artists. You have to be nominated to receive that award. There's a panel that selects it. The only way you can get nominated, though, is by somebody on the nomination committee. So you have to do a little digging to try to see if you can find the person that's on the nomination committee. It changes every year. And that's a really wonderful event that we hold at the Poetry Center. And then we also do an opera award called the Igor Gorin Award to a promising opera singer, and that's a national award. Again, it's a $10,000 cash prize to that artist.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One of the questions that a few people had was about fiscal sponsorship, and I know some of you have touched on that a little bit, but if you could share whether or not, two different things. If you're an artist and you're applying as an artist for an award, do you need to be fiscally sponsored? And then if you're if you're an organization that has a fiscal sponsor, does that fiscal sponsor need to be located in Arizona or locally for any and all of you? Maybe we'll start down at the end.
I'll start, let's see. So as far as individual artists, no. Individual artists do not need to be fiscally sponsored. They just apply as an individual, and our grant programs are set up that way for them. So you as an artist can apply as an individual. Our professional development grant program also is eligible for arts administrators. So there again, you can be an individual and apply kind of with the umbrella. You can mention who your organization is you work for, but you will apply as an individual. So our individual grants, you can just apply as yourself. Let's see. For organizations for fiscal sponsorship, there are some, at least in the Community Investment Grant Program, there are only certain levels of eligibility that you can apply with a fiscal sponsor. That would be levels 1 and 2. There are 6 levels of eligibility in that grant program. 1 for the smallest organizations, 6 for major institutions. So folks in levels 1 and 2 of eligibility can apply with a fiscal sponsor. They do not need to be in Arizona. You can use Fractured Atlas or another national nonprofit. There are some instances where there's an Arizona chapter or element of a larger national group, and those applicants use the national federal ID number as their fiscal sponsorship. So when they're awarded, their award funds do run through the national and then come back to them, essentially, but that's how they can apply. Let's see, the Capoeira Southwest Institute is the one in Tucson that I know of that does that. Festivals, let's see, kind of the same thing. You can use a registered nonprofit. They don't have to be in Arizona, but they do have to have their 501c3 number, their federal tax ID number. And then for both cases, for us, you need to have a letter of agreement with that fiscal sponsor. Instead of uploading your IRS letter of determination, you provide for us a letter of fiscal sponsorship agreement between yourself, your entity, and the fiscal sponsor. It outlines the terms of your agreement. That's also to protect you. So if there's any sort of terms or fees or any sort of conditions that need to be met with your fiscal sponsoring organization, it is laid out in the letter, and then it needs to be signed by both entities. And then that just gets uploaded in place of your IRS letter. So, and then I believe for our arts education programs, I believe our Lifelong Arts Engagement Grant Program, which is our continuing education arts learning grant, I believe you can use a fiscal sponsor in those situations too. That cover it?
So individual artists can only be funded through those 2 award programs I just talked about. Otherwise, most of our grant programs are open to using a fiscal sponsor.
And but does it need to be located in Arizona?
You need to be able to be serving the communities of Southern Arizona. So if you're based in Phoenix but you're doing all your work here in Tucson, you would be eligible. So we really care about the money staying in Arizona to serve the people of Southern Arizona.
Grant individuals applying to our grants, you don't need to be fiscally sponsored. We're happy to grant to individual artists or projects like that. Otherwise, we do accept fiscal sponsorship, especially for our general operating support program, although we've only had a couple instances where that's been required. Do fiscal sponsors need to be based in Arizona?
I think they do need to be based in Arizona.
Yeah, for us. That's how few the sort of instances of that we've encountered. But yeah, they do need to be based in Arizona. But fiscal sponsorship is allowed, especially in the case of general operating support.
So we do not allow fiscal sponsors. However, we strongly encourage partnerships, which is a great little kind of workaround. So in that case, we can't fund individuals at all. But if you have an organization that is eligible to apply and they want to work in partnership with you to put on a program, that organization will be the one applying. They'll be the one receiving the funds, signing all agreements, taking care of all that. But we would treat this program as a partnership between that individual and that organization. The same goes between 2 different organizations as well. So again, it's kind of that little federal workaround. but there's always that possibility. And the organization does not have to be based in Arizona, but the funds have to go for programs that are going to impact Arizona and Arizonans.
So we grant to U.S. domestic 501c3s almost exclusively. However, we have made grants to individuals that are working with a fiscal sponsor, and that doesn't have to be in Arizona.
We have several questions that are some variation of how do you write a great grant proposal? What's the one thing that people who review the applications are looking for? If anyone wants to talk about those questions, please.
I'll take it.
Okay.
So I see a lot of grants. The biggest thing for us is just be very clear with your language. I mean, if you were to give your grant to someone who had no idea what you were doing, which is typically who's reading your grant, make sure they understand what you're doing.
really clear, concise language is really the best. To be honest, if you have how many characters, let's say you have 1,500 characters, don't feel like you need to use it. Please just say what you need to say. Tell us why you know you're successful and how you're going to measure your success. I mean, that's really that basic formula. Our foundation is really great because we really pride ourselves in looking past sort of like the slickness and really getting to the heart of what you do. We understand a lot of nonprofits can't hire grant writers. Mm-hmm. And so we really try to, you know, coach our nonprofits with their applications if we see there's some things they can improve on. But, you know that as grant readers, we're just looking for the passion and the heart and that you're really making an impact. So,
anyone else?
Serve as a panelist. When you put yourself in the position of reviewing other grant applications and you're trying to ask those questions, trying to discern, is this worthy of funding? It really helps flip that idea of trying to figure out what is complete. And we at the commission, we have this list of 10 C's of grant writing, and I'm trying to run through them all. But like concise, complete, compelling, clear. That's five. I'll think of another. I should have brought that handout. But yeah, if you serve as a panelist, it really kind of helps flip that idea. So you're looking like, well, did they answer the whole question? Mm-hmm. Do I understand who they are and what they're doing? Did they follow the instructions? Mm-hmm. So I'd say, you know, if you can, serve as a panelist. But think about those things. The best advice I give to folks is if you hand your completed application to a total stranger, yes, who doesn't know you, doesn't know the work you're doing, doesn't know your organization, have them read it. And then see what questions they bring to you. That's what you need to fill. Those are the holes you need to fill. Because those panelists that are reviewing, at least in a public sense, or in any sense, they don't necessarily know who you are. So,
yeah. So a couple of years ago, Vu Lee from Nonprofit AF, which used to be something else, put out the pain index and the flail index. And one of them is from the perspective of a grant seeker, and one is from the perspective of a grant funder, and it's literally a Excel spreadsheet, and it goes through and you can rate yourself on your application or your review of applications or your process, and like on the funder side you can get the magic unicorn award, which is like really really good funders, you know. But anyhow, I would recommend Googling it, looking it up, because it's a really excellent list of points of what to include in your application or what not to include in your application, like perfumed letters, or you know, it's funny, but it's also very practical. It's Nonprofit AF, Vu Lee, V-U-L-E-E is his name, and if you look at the flail or the pain index, it actually, it's funny, but it really is practical.
Yeah. Oh, and I'd also recommend if grantors allow it, and I know Carol had talked about I don't know what's happening here, but I can't access that. I wonder if I do this, will it? No. Huh. Well, anyway, if the grantor allows it, to submit your application early and have it reviewed and get feedback on it, that is completely invaluable. Oh, thank you. Oh, you just stood there. Okay. Natalia's magical. Have it reviewed and get feedback on it. It requires a lot of forethought. You need to do it. Usually, I know when I've done it with national funders, something like 6 weeks before the grant is actually due, maybe even.
Yeah, we don't even.
Oh, you don't?
Review drafts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. Not with the NEA. I know the National Endowment for the Humanities,
right. Yeah,
does
yeah,
that. So take advantage of that if that's possible.
I don't have the capacity to do full draft reviews, but I'm happy to answer specific questions. Like if there's a narrative question you're trying to grapple with, or how do I approach this thing, I try to help in those situations, but at the commission, we don't have the capacity to do full draft reviews either.
Okay,
same.
I would say that as well.
Okay, then. In that case, I'd also recommend the external reviewer. Give it to someone who has no clue what you're doing and see what questions they come back with. Mm-hmm. That's great. So with that, I'll open it up to questions from all of you. Questions? Yeah.
Question for Kristen. Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll get to you soon.
Yeah. Are the professional development grants open again?
Not at this point for fiscal year 19. The program is on hiatus. If anybody has been following the issues we've been having with the Arizona Corporation Commission with our funding, our cash flow issues, The Professional Development Grant Program is currently on hiatus. However, we do plan to open it again in the new fiscal year. So I think that would mean for funding for the new fiscal year. So there might be the next application deadline starting to fund fiscal year 20 appearing. I know the guidelines are in revision right now. So look at for guidelines coming out in the next couple, like April. And then I think there might be a May deadline to begin funding for July 1st.
And you're July to June.
Yeah. We are July through June. Yeah, that is our funding cycle. We've got the split fiscal year. So that program is currently on hiatus. But we do have a new one called the Artist Opportunity Grant that's a little different, but that one actually has private funding for it. So we do have funds available for the Artist Opportunity Grant, and the next deadline for that is March 15th. And so check that one out. I don't know if it would fit for what you're thinking, but you could look into that one in the time for the time being.
Perfect. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in asking for advice for people like me, small business owner, single mother, struggling to survive with zero admin staff, and how do you navigate the time-consuming process of trying to apply for grants, and then the disappointing when you do give a lot of your time when you're one step away from, you know, at any given time from poverty or not being able to pay your rent or pay my employees, like all the time that I put into applying for grants and then don't get that funding. I mean, that is there funding for people like me or people like that I employ who are like me, that any small bits of grants to just survive while you apply for the grants?
Yeah. I'll take a stab at that because I've been there. The quick answer is no. Grants are a very structured thing. They're a very structured funding source. I would say what helps in the early startup phases when you're just scrapping to get by, what I like to call fundraising, leading to fundraising. It's the people that you know and the people that are working with you that they know that you can start to ask for support, either if it's in kind or eventually cash. Raising funds in those way, if you've got limited time to spend on fundraising and you're going to put 20 hours into writing a grant that you may not get for $1,000 versus activating your networks to maybe do an online fundraiser or ask for donations face-to-face, I would go that direction first. Grants can come in time. Grants also, you get rewarded with the more history usually that you have, so more activities under your belt, more people that you've served. So if you can get through the painful startup phase with your fundraising first, then it starts to move in, grants become easier. That would just be my personal two cents as far as which way to go in that position. But happy to talk more about that if you're interested.
Anyone else?
I think you can also, you know, call a funder and ask them, like, how competitive is this grant really? You know, how many applications are you expecting to get? How much money are you expecting to give out? And you can sort of weigh it against your time commitment. I mean, we're always more than happy to let you know that. Mm-hmm. Because we don't want, you know, you to spend a lot of time on a grant that may not be fruitful for you or appropriate.
And I'd say also, So also during your research phase, when you're looking at possible grants, really match that against yourself and just see which ones have that best match. Go for the low-hanging fruit, because the problem is sometimes you can send a grant out to, you know, 50 different organizations, but if you're not fitting with their mission and their criteria, then you're kind of, you're spinning your wheels at that point. So, like I said, really just scour their guidelines, their website, things like that. See exactly what they're looking to fund and see how well you match first before you put all that time, because it can be really disheartening. It's a lot of work to get a grant in.
So. I would also suggest that if you are experiencing disappointment of not receiving funding, that you get in touch with the funder and take criticism or edits about how you might approach it in the future so that you do have a better opportunity going forward.
And one other thing I can add too, in this building, the Pima County Library has their nonprofit resource center. If you're a new grant, if you're a new organization and you have no idea how to write a grant or how to research grants, if you just enter out of the courtyard on the left in the first seat, like I said, the Pima County Library Center are waiting with a grant database. They can help you search, they can give you grant writing tips, and talk to you a lot more about it. So educate yourself on that.
And I know from the Arts Foundation's perspective, one of the things that we're trying to do in order to lower the barrier for people is we're accepting video applications, and we're sort of slowly rolling out how we're doing that and for which applications we're doing that. We started doing it with our START awards, which are for artists for capital resources or for nonprofit organizations. We kept it to, I think, four questions. four questions that people just answer by video, and it's you can use your phone and just talk into it. We told the reviewers we're not interested in how it's edited or anything like that, and I will say that the organizations and artists that were funded, it truly was everything from I'm holding my phone in front of my face and answering these questions to things that were edited together. It was a really broad swath, so we're trying to lower barriers in that way as well.
Can you tell me where, I didn't catch what organization you are?
Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, where Natalia works as well. And now we're doing that for our New Works grant as well, because it worked so well for our START grants. We had many more applications this year for our START grants than we have in the past, and so we're hoping and assuming that we'll get more applications for our New Works awards as well, because it will be a video application.
Yeah, I applied for it 2 years ago, and I worked so hard, and obviously I didn't get it. So that's exciting news.
Okay. Great.
Great. So all the application details, just if you missed that, all the application details are on the sheet with the green. So you can look for it there.
Yeah. Other questions? Yeah.
Kristen, can the university, I'm at the University of Arizona at the Arizona State Museum, are we eligible for operating support grants or just for the festival?
Just for festival, yeah. So for Community Investment for our GOS, that is 501c3 organizations with fiscal sponsorship, local arts agencies are eligible for that, tribal cultural organizations, but university college departments are not eligible or affiliated with universities technically, unless they fall into that independent entity, and we can have more conversation about that. We do have a couple awardees in the CIG program that Carol in the beginning talked about, like there's a partnership with the university, but there is a separation of the entity, like separate fundraising, separate accounting. We can talk more about that, but generally university and college departments are not eligible for GOS funding from us.
And then Kelly, who do we talk to about to give, send information to the donor advisor?
Other questions? No? Going once? Going twice? Yes.
I was just wondering if there were some unique trends in the arts for Southern Arizona that funders are looking to support.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, at the Arizona Commission, we're doing a lot of work along the border. We have initiatives in Douglas, and we have our AZ Art Worker program. There, it's not exactly a grant program, but if you check out our website with our AZ Art Worker program work, it's in Douglas, it's cross-border, we're working in Tucson. So in Southern Arizona, we are doing a lot of work with indigenous communities, through that program. I would check that one out. That's kind of at least a focus that we're having. And actually at the commission, we're shifting into a place of putting more focus on racial and ethnic equity and geographic parity in our programs and in our grant making. So that's kind of something statewide that we're looking at trying to infuse more into our process, from all the way from the application side of things through the panel review. So this year my panelists are going through a unconscious bias training before they go into their panel review work as well. So we're working that way.
I might just talk a little bit about that and sort of what we've been looking to support over the last couple of years is in initiatives is something that is will help change the system, the structure, and get at the solution of the problem. For us, the problem is youth access to the arts. How do we get more youth, K-12, with access to meaningful engagement in the arts? And because we believe that that's just, that makes whole, well-rounded citizens and is essential to their education and their becoming a citizen. And so the idea that has drifted so far away from education in the schools and now is being relied upon the community to support that that component of their education, some people may not even remember when that was part of public education. And so there's a couple of things that have happened here recently that are maybe you may not have heard of, but ESSA, which is the new school law that it replaced No Child Left Behind, Every Student Succeeds Act, actually called out the arts in writing as part of a well-rounded education, and that's the first time that's happened, and so that's significant. The other thing is that in Title IV of that new law, there is funding for the arts through that program, and so, but it can also be shunted to career technical education, and there are panels, there are the review panels for schools that rate how well they're doing under that law and creating a well-rounded education. And it's an opportunity for the community and for every one of you to find an advocate in your organization or your world who is interested in the arts and say, hey, does your kid go to school, the public school? Great. Get elbow your way onto that panel at the school and start raising a ruckus about bringing the arts back into schools and making it part of that well-rounded education. So that's at the federal level. The state level, you know, there has been efforts to try and create credit for the arts, to create rubrics so that you can actually measure, how a student performs and then give them a credit on their diploma for the arts. And that's these are longer-term efforts, but that's the kind of stuff that, you know, we're interested in. How do we change the field of, I was trying to think of a shorthand way to think of a program versus an initiative. Program, if your program disappeared tomorrow, would you have changed the world? Would you have changed the field? Certainly you would have changed the individuals and the people that you served in your program, but you may not have changed the trajectory of the arts. And so for us, we're looking for initiatives that are things that are going to change that trajectory. And to me, the biggest issue there is that philanthropy is a drop in the bucket compared to the federal funding that goes towards education. And we are always going to be scraping the barrel to try and pull together community-run arts programs to fill that bigger need, which is meeting the children where they are, which is in school most of the time during the day. And can we reignite that arts as essential part of education? So that's my two cents on that.
And I'd say to Arizona Humanities, our focus has lately been a lot on this idea of democracy and the informed citizen. So, looking at, along with that as well as community dialogue. So getting people talking, getting people interacting with each other about current issues. And so there's so many, you need a whole bunch of them that all fit under that umbrella. As well as also looking at environment and the humanities. So we have our traveling exhibit Smithsonian Waterways, traveling the state right now, and so that's kind of spearheaded that initiative, and it's great because we've been getting folks in to collaborate with us all the way from, political science to the arts, just kind of runs the gamut of the human experience. We all need water, we all experience it in different ways. And so the great thing about grants is that, or at least our general grants, is that it doesn't have to be tied to either of those initiatives, but we do love seeing those come in right now.
I'll go off of John's a little bit, but because the Arts Foundation is public funding, so many of our funding decisions are community-based, and so we're not necessarily basing trends specifically on what's going on in the arts field, but it is sort of what's going on in the community. So the more self-awareness you have as an artist or an organization about your connection to the community and what that connection looks like and what it means to the community, generally the more compelling the grant that you're writing is going to be. And so having that self-awareness can be really useful as far as the funding situation there goes.
Okay, other questions? Okay, I want to thank our panelists. I want to thank them for sitting in alphabetical order. Put them up here on this slide. And for more information on any of the funders who are here, this is their website. I also want to especially thank the folks who came down from Phoenix very early this morning. Thank you for making the trip. Thank you to the Community Foundation for hosting us. I want to thank all of you for being here. You are what make us work, so thank you. I also want to share that I will be sending out a survey, if not today, tomorrow. Please respond to the survey. The Arts Foundation in particular, the work that we do is very community-based. We want to be better. We want to serve you better. The only way we can do that is if we get feedback from you. So please check your spam. And probably come from Eventbrite, open the survey, and respond. And on your way out, please feel free to take a bagel or a coffee. And And thank you all again, and thank you, Carol, for coming, and thank you all for being here.